This is Hidden Mickey Guy, Steve Barrett, and you're listening to the Disney Nerds Podcast.
This episode of the Disney Nerds Podcast is brought to you by TouringPlans.com. Spend more time on rides and less time in line enjoying Walt Disney World. That's TouringPlans.com.
Welcome to the splendor, the spectacle, the sparkling sensation, where the romance, the comedy, and the thrill of Disney fantasies come to electric life.
And as our friend Jiminy said, welcome. Welcome to the Disney Nerds Podcast, a place each week where like-minded people get together to discuss all things Disney. We'll help you get your Disney fix on. Here we go.
The Magic Kingdom proudly presents, in a million points of musical light, the magical worlds of Disney.
Hello, Disney nerds. It is Tuesday night. Welcome to another Tuesday night live stream. I've got my friend Morgan with me. What's up, Morgan? How are you?
What's going on? I have a little Disney blues, but I'm going to put that aside for tonight.
You are fresh back from a trip, and I am. If I wasn't gone in like a week and 3 days, I would be super, super jealous.
Yep. Was a jam pack, but we'll talk about my trip another time.
Did you get to see the eclipse?
No, because we don't really get I'm in North Carolina. We didn't get a good view. It got a little dark, but that was it.
Well, in New Orleans it was cloudy all day, so I didn't get to see anything. I walked outside of work and I'm like, well, I can't see anything. It's just cloudy. It was cloudy all day. It was dark all day pretty much. Yep. So
it's like, and that's a cloud.
So we got a great show lined up for you guys tonight, a special guest. As you guys know, we started our book club about a month and a half ago, and we were only supposed to go, I think, a month. I'm glad we went a month and a half because I don't think I would have finished in time. So we'll probably go another month and a half, I'm guessing, for the next one, just to make sure everybody's got time to squeeze it in. So we have a special guest tonight. The book we did, and Morgan, maybe you could have it prepped before we after we do the intro, and just a picture of the book so we can show that. But it was Bloodline, Star Wars story by Claudia Gray. It was really, really good. And won't go too deep into it until after the intro, but basically it's kind of like the story of Leia in between,
Well, we're 25 years after the Return of Jedi.
And yeah, right before
6 years before Force Awakens.
So basically the kind of the birth of the Resistance.
Yep.
So, all right. So we'll go ahead, and I'm very excited to talk to Claudia about this. I enjoyed the book thoroughly. It was really well done. I did an audiobook, which, was amazing. So we'll go ahead and roll our intro for Tuesday night.
And guys, share this out, please. Your friends are going to watch this episode. So
yeah, absolutely. So we'll see you guys back here in about 2 minutes. We'll be right back. All right. Makes me want to go back to Disney and do another meetup with all our friends.
And we still got to add the pictures from November.
I know, this past year. I know. All right. Without further ado, let's run through these real quick. I think you did some of them. Hey, Melissa. Hey, Terry. Jody and Jamie. George, what's happening? David and Lily. Thank you all for joining. If you're watching the show and hadn't already checked in, please drop a comment where you're watching from. We'd love to see it. And then also, please drop some questions for Claudia about the book. So, hello there, Miss Claudia. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Fantastic.
Highlight on the fan.
Highlight, yes. So, let's get started. Just with kind of what your inspiration for Bloodline.
Well, the way it usually works with Star Wars is they come to you and they have an idea, which the first time I did it, I thought, oh, they'll give me a whole outline and tell me exactly what to write, which is not it at all. They give you a little information. Bloodline, I got more information than I had before, maybe about a page of information. And, you know, it told me sort of where she was. This is supposed to be the story about why she sees that war coming when nobody else does, how Princess Leia becomes General Organa. And it was a very political storyline. Castrofo was in it, but different. He actually was originally a character from George Lucas's materials for a potential sequel trilogy that obviously he ultimately decided not to make. But they had sort of this political storyline and the information about the napkin bombing for some reason. And I liked it, but do we swear on this podcast?
No. I mean, it's somewhat, you know, sometimes. All right. I'll leave it to you guys to know where
the swear word actually was, okay? Yeah. I read it, and I called the editor and said, this is all great, but she's got to blow stuff up.
Yeah.
Leia, the Leia I think we have always seen on screen, is not somebody who is content to sit on the sidelines. She wants to be in the middle of things.
Sure.
So I got to develop the storyline out from there using sort of the political suggestions they had made, but also giving her a very hopefully dynamic thing to do in investigating it herself, getting mixed up in some things herself. They also were very firm. They said, there's no Luke, there's no Han, there's no Ben Solo. And while they actually told me very little about The Force Awakens, which wasn't out yet when I wrote it, they did tell me about Ben Kylo Ren. Then I wound up pushing back on that because one of the events they had given me was like, and the galaxy will find out that Darth Vader's her father. And I said, okay, so you're telling me Leia and Han are still together at this point. Yes. And they said, yes. I said, okay, if that's true, there is no way in which Han does not come to find her.
Yes.
That doesn't happen. And their concern was, like, it was a very legitimate concern. A lot of times, Leia kind of had the tendency to get the least interesting part of the three. Or, you know, sort of the part that was political instead of action oriented, etc. And they wanted something to really be a showcase for her. But I was like, please trust me to not have Han come in and have take over the book. That's not going to happen. And they finally said yes. So I got to create the book out of that. And it was really fun to look at it all because, you know, I love Star Wars, but it has never been awash in the viewpoints of women over 40. There hasn't been a ton of it. And it was interesting to take Princess Leia, who was my hero when I was a kid, and growing up and say, okay, here she is. She's just a few years older than you. She's hit this part in life. Okay. What do all these things look like when you are older and you see things with more shades of gray and you can know that you can win the love of your life, but it doesn't mean that everything is perfect between you forever, or you can win that war and everything will still be incredibly complicated. You know, yeah. I got to just kind of revisit it, and I wanted to bring that greater sense of sort of maturity and experience to it while still making it feel like Star Wars.
Right.
So that was the inspiration. Sorry. That was kind of a long answer.
No, you, I love it. I love it. I want, so a couple points. Not Castervo, because I listened to it on the audiobook, which is wrong. Which is, so it's, say it again.
Castervo,
not Castervo.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I now submit an audio pronunciation guide with every book because of this experience.
Well, and you know, I mean, I'm sure the narrator, by the way, if you listen to it on Audible, did a fantastic job.
Oh yeah, they get the best.
The only, you know, one of the voices that I think didn't hit a home run, and I think most of them did, was, I, you know, we talked about this with our other co-host Ed, who couldn't be here tonight. C-3PO's voice, it was a little bit of a, look, it's one person doing all these voices. I believe me, I'm not, no judgment, but I was like, that's the only one that was a little just tiny off. I didn't hear C-3PO when C-3PO was speaking, but the rest of them, I mean, I thought she did Leia's voice. She did all of them very, very well. And it's really interesting. And we mentioned this before we went live, but I'm like, it's almost like, you know, the first Star Wars one I did was Ahsoka. Mm-hmm. Was the book Ahsoka, which was ridiculously incredible because Ashley Eckstein narrates the book, who is Ahsoka. So you're literally listening to the Ahsoka from the animated series read it to you. But they just even the sound effects and stuff just make it so real. Another point that Ed and I were talking about is how, and Morgan too, is how political the book was. And it was very, very political.
Especially since the book came out in 2016. One thing that Ed said was
came out. Did it come out? It did come out in 2016. It was written in 2015.
Yeah,
but it did come out in 2016.
Because then Lost Stars, which was your first book, that came out in 2015, if I remember right.
That's correct.
But that I like Ed messaged me and he's like, "This is political." It like focuses on like now, you can relate to now's politics, and I'm like, it was written a couple like years ago, and maybe it just kind of shows you that politics doesn't change whether you're in the galaxy far, far away or right here in the US.
So yeah, there were a bunch of reviewers who wanted to say that I'd written this about the 2016 election, and I was like, guys, it was done.
That book was written
at the end of 2015. And if I were going to pick something to go lathe of heaven on, man, that would not have been it. But, certain things do crop up. And I actually went to some pains, like I made it clear that both the main political groups in Bloodline have what we would think of as right and left wings.
Yeah.
You know, their political opinions don't line up necessarily in the exact same category as ours, because they shouldn't, because it's a fundamentally different
world
scenario. Yeah. But, you know, still there should be things that feel familiar, because humans or characters who operate from priorities we understand as humans, certain conflicts and certain points of view are going to creep up over and over again. So I got to dig into that.
I was on the phone with our other co-host Ed the other day, and I was almost through. I think I was like on chapter 27 or 28. And I said, we had this conversation about the politics. I'm like, and I won't go into details, but I'm like, yeah, but if this is this and this is that, and they believe this, and that's kind of out. That doesn't really line up with what it would in your comparison. And he's like, man, you're right. So I think the other thing is that I was very impressed with is that not only do you see Leia as an older person, but you also see kind of her growth in it, that she has these opinions about Castrofo. And then as she gets to know him and lets her guard down a little bit, she understands where he's coming from a little bit and kind of says, well, I understand, you know, she sees his point of view a little bit. And I think that's, I think it was an important part to see that growth in her, just because the book is so political and it does come down to, you know what, you don't really, you think you know just based upon politics, but you don't really know until you really understand the person and why they have the point of view that they do. And I think that's a, I thought that was a big growth thing. And for him too. So they both went into this relationship with these polarized points of view on how things should be. And then as they developed the friendship, they both could see things from each other's side. And in spite of their politics, became friends. Now we know later down the line that some political ambition and, maybe a feel of betrayal maybe got Castrofo to do something he probably shouldn't have did, but you know it, but you know in his mind the person he finds out that he's friends with the person who he hates his most daughter, so I'm sure it was, I'm sure in his brain it was a kind of a breaking point. So
yeah, that was a massive betrayal. And I mean, Leia couldn't be in the position where she is if she weren't somebody who digs in hard on what she believes. I mean, my God, all the stuff that she had to do, of course she is mega committed. And under the circumstances, of course she tends to distrust people who don't agree. You know, her experience is such that she almost has to be coming at it from that way. And Castrofo is, and I felt like this was a suggestion in the sequel trilogy that is just one of the many things they should have followed up on a little bit more in the sequel trilogy. But the First Order is primarily made up of younger looking officers, you know? Whereas we looked at the Empire, everybody was older. They'd worked their way up, et cetera. And I thought it was very telling that the First Order are younger people who didn't live through that war or have only very faint memories of it. And Castrofo has memories of it, but you know, they skew his thinking in a different way. They don't have Leia's experiences or some of those other people's experiences to make them go like, oh, you know, you may have a point, but the road you're traveling down with that point is an incredibly dangerous one.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, one thing I want to ask, obviously, I mean, this is one of the things, and I'm going to have a fangirl moment here, so I apologize in advance.
It's all good.
One of the things that I love about your writing is your development of Leia. This is not your only book that you've written about Leia. Spoiler alert, everybody, she has another awesome book. But it's Leia when she's younger. Have you always been a Leia fan? And where is your inspiration in developing her with like the aspects we don't see in the movies? Because you're basically giving us these vital pieces of Leia's life that we don't see on screen. And I don't feel like I'm explaining it right. But yeah, the way you develop it's amazing. And I just wanted to, like, where do you get that inspiration from?
I was part of, you know, the first generation of Star Wars fans. I turned 7 the year it came out. So it was my childhood. It was the childhood of everybody around me. It was so huge. Like, I feel like people who've grown up post-monoculture, you know, back when things were only came to you through a few media outlets and everybody kind of knew a lot of the same stuff, whether they were into it or not. Like, I don't think you can even really comprehend how dominant Star Wars was as a cultural influence, as a metaphor, you know, political cartoons, everything all the time. So, you know, obviously was a huge Princess Leia fan. We had very few female action heroes, genre heroes, characters in sci-fi and fantasy who really got to be part of the adventure and not be the prize that got won,
the distress,
at the end. Yeah. You know, so obviously I just glommed right onto her and have always loved her ever since.
That was so intentional in the original movie. That was so intentional by George Lucas to make her not a damsel in distress, that, you know, with the aren't you kind of short to be a stormtrooper, and, you know, things like that, that just in the way she was just very snippy with Han in the beginning. And it was
you don't have Carrie Fisher if that's what you want. You're like, he cast Carrie Fisher. He knew exactly where 100%. So that is great. So yeah, basically, I mean, this is a joke, but there's also some truth to it. I have spent my whole life going like, what would Princess Leia do? And then finally they were like, okay, sure, we will give you money to do that.
Yeah.
Just go ahead and tell us.
So question from the audience, from Melissa, did Disney title the book, or did you get to title it? So did they say, hey, here's the name of the book, this is what we want, or?
They did title it. I've gotten to title almost all of my other books, but Star Wars, which ones have I gotten to title? Really, I think the only ones I got to title for Star Wars have been Lost Stars and Leia, Princess of Alderaan. So, this one, they came up with it, and I mean, I liked it. Don't get me wrong. I think it's a good title. I probably would have preferred something that was a little less. There are a lot of books with the name Bloodline.
Yeah.
Many. Also,
we found that out.
I am 50. It is 50% whether people are going to call it Bloodline or Bloodlines. So I probably would have liked something that gave it a little bit of a spin that made it a little more unique. But, you know,
maybe like
Bloodline is a perfectly good title. It hasn't held it back any.
Yeah.
Yeah, we noticed that, too. I don't know how we came up with it, but I think it was actually Ed searched for Bloodline and came up with some
completely different book.
Some completely different book that looked probably like it was a little risque. So we were like, so we made sure that when we were promoting it for the book club, we're like, no, you want this one for sure. Claudia, did you see the Obi-Wan series?
I did, yes.
And what's your opinion on the way Leia is and was written in that?
For the most part, I really loved it. I did think there was a little bit of inconsistency in terms of sometimes she was very mature and sometimes she was very little kiddish. But in my experience, actual children are sometimes this way as well. And I think most parents and caretakers of kids will back that up. Sometimes they can come out with something that's just really deep and
mature. Old soul.
Like, and then now they're pouring, you know, Cheerios on the dog, you know. So even though I thought that there was some inconsistency there, I didn't know that I thought the inconsistency went beyond what can actually be the truth with kids. I liked the young actress.
She was fantastic. She was
terrific. I loved getting to see Alderaan. I loved getting to see Bail and Brea with her. And I liked that she was smart and ingenious and determined to do what she could do. Even, you know, sometimes it wasn't a great idea. Sometimes it was. And I loved Lola. We all need a Lola.
I have one.
Oh, yeah.
Terry, one of our other co-hosts and friends, if Bloodline was turned into a film, wondering who you would pick for Castrofo and Rin Riven die.
Rin Riven, whoever wants to put on that makeup is welcome to do it. I will say, and it's hard to tell this from his name, but I was a big fan of the TV show Alias that was on like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Anybody familiar with it?
Sure.
Ron Rifkin played Arvin Sloan. And something about Ron Rifkin and Arvin former in Riven's name, and he has this wonderful, like, sneaky, unctuous voice that can sound so, like, reassuring and polite and heartfelt, and the whole time you're like, this person's gonna kill me.
Yeah.
So I was probably imagining his voice. And I think Castro, I think about half the people who read it are like, this is Tom Hiddleston, right? And I'm like, yes, it is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the physical description is pretty dead on. He has Hiddleston's actual hair color, which we don't see that much.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was exactly the kind of thing. I also saw some people suggesting Lee Pace, which I think would also be a pretty interesting pick for that. But in my head, it was definitely Tom Hiddleston.
Who's Josh?
I'd just seen Crimson Peak, which came out that fall while I was writing it. And I think it wasn't the Loki-ness. It was Crimson Peak, I think, that got in my brain. It was also like, oh, that guy.
Yeah,
Terry's got me thinking now. Like, so now who's Josh Seastriker?
Oh, he probably in my head is Josh Hutcherson, aka Peeta Mullarky from The Hunger Games.
I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah. I just rewatched all five movies, going That's all good. The way to Ballad like of Some Birds and Snakes.
He was one of my favorites out of the book.
Yeah, he's great. I love those books. I love those movies. You know, we had a huge tide of YA there from, you know, the ridiculous to the sublime, but I am pretty convinced that The Hunger Games is going to linger the longest and have the biggest pop culture resonance because it's a really great story. All right, sorry, this is not actually
you're good. You're good.
We're nerds. It still works.
I am a nerd.
We go and all. Oh my god, if Ed was here, he'd be yelling at me, but. I go on tangents all the time. We can go all over. No telling where we might end up.
When you're writing, like, especially with Star Wars, because it's so canon and, like, there's so many, I guess, rules in a way, do you already have the idea of the characters that have not been fully developed yet of, like, okay, they have this color hair and their voice sounds like this? Or is Lucasfilm telling you, okay, no, we already know this is their mannerisms, this is everything about them. Like, how much freedom do you get to develop those characters that don't have the development yet?
Who are you talking? Are you talking about original characters?
Yeah.
Oh, those are all me.
Okay.
Those are all mine. You know, they may say, like, we need somebody in an area. What happened with Castrofo? He just had the one name, Castrofo, and it was spelled with a K, which I didn't like. And originally, he was supposed to be on Leia's staff. Like, he worked with her. He was in her office. But he had this secret stash of Imperial artifacts. And then he sneakily revealed to the galaxy that Darth Vader was her father. And I did not like that. The primary reason I didn't was Leia, we've seen her lead two underground movements where betrayal equals death. I was like, if this person did not know how to evaluate who to trust, she doesn't even live to make it to A New Hope. I didn't buy for a second that she would have anybody as blatantly greasy as, you know, the original take of Castrofo was in her, you know, inner circle. I didn't buy that for a second. So I was like, okay, I'm going to make him openly the opponent, but he's the opponent she has to listen to. And also, because there was going to be no Ben, no Luke, and only a very little bit of Han, don't get me wrong, like, Leia is a complete person all in herself. Her story is interesting all in herself, but just as a human being, if you are a parent without your kid, or a sibling without your sibling, or a spouse without your spouse, you feel the lack of those people.
Yeah. Sure.
You just do. And Castrofo, I kind of worked out, like, he hits a little bit of the beats that those people that aren't in her life, you know, he's somebody she can actually have really thoughtful philosophical difficult conversations with, sort of like with Luke. He's a younger person that she's trying to mentor and teach, you know, like her son. He can drive her absolutely crazy, like Han, et cetera. So, you know, it was an interesting thing to have somebody come into her life who checks a few of those boxes. And that also, I thought, helped make it more compelling. Like, of course, she begins to trust and connect to this person because they're all of this is going on.
Yeah. He's reminding her of these people that she misses so much.
It's also interesting that their relationship just is really interesting because their relationship is almost a roller coaster ride. You know, and even though he feels like she betrayed him and ultimately betrays her, they even get past that to a point that, you know, he does her like the most honorable thing he could do by letting her, by being the only one on his side to vote to let her speak, even after the fact. And then she sees that as just, you know, definitely sees that, you know, maybe I think maybe she gets the realization that how bad she actually hurt him by having him find out the way he did of who she was, knowing everything she knew about him and what Vader did to his family. So I thought that was great. And I thought, I guess the last time they meet is when he's being taken to prison basically. And it's almost like they've, I guess maybe not friends, but you could see that road to like maybe them renewing a friendship.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I very much felt like the potential for that was there. For so many years, I kept telling Del Rey, like, I want to write the book where she breaks him out of jail, you know. And then they were like, well, could we have him mentioned in this other book somebody's writing? I was like, sure, just don't make it the story where she breaks him out of jail. Yeah. Guess what happens in that book? Which is not the writer's fault. They did not tell the writer.
Well, what book is that? If you don't.
Is it Resistance Reborn?
Okay.
Is this Rising? One of those?
I'll have to Google that because I don't
know that. It's a wonderfully written book. If anybody else was going to do that, I'm glad she did it. But it was one of those things where, you know, every once in a while when you're doing work for hire, you're like, oh, they, you know, at least Del Rey did not care that much about whether or not I would get to tell that story. So. You know, there we go.
But you want, I mean, yeah, it's you're at this point, it's your story and you want to see it through.
Yeah. I hope someday I'll get to write something else with Leia in the Resistance era and maybe I'll get to revisit Castrofo as well. But, you know, we will see.
That was actually one question I was going to ask. Is there any of the books that you've written for Star Wars that you want to write the sequel for? I mean, obviously you just said that you would like to have done the jailbreak, but are there any other ones that you wish you could have done the sequel for or can do the sequel for?
I mean, obviously, I'd love to do a Lost Stars 2 if I got the right leeway to do it. I keep feeling like that's going to happen someday, but I don't know when. And all honesty, I thought I would have heard from them by now. But that's something that I definitely have a lot more story for. But at the same time, if it ends where it ends, I am okay with that. And I would love to do more with Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan following Master and Apprentice. In particular, I would love to do the thing with Obi-Wan and young Satine back in the day, but I have a feeling Mr. Filoni is saving that one for himself.
Probably, I'm sure.
What's the good stuff for himself?
What's the process of between you and Lucas when it comes to writing, like how often are they reviewing what you've written and making sure that it's something that they want to be canonized?
You know, in the beginning they give you a prompt. Bloodline had way more information. Usually the prompt is like one or two lines.
Gotcha.
Like Master Apprentice was just like, we want an adventure with Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan about 6 or 7 years before the Phantom Menace. And that was it. But while I'm coming up with the story, I run things by them. I've learned to ask a lot of questions, you know, like, can I use the huts?
Yeah.
Can I use a little hut, lot of hut, how much hut, you know, et cetera. With Master Apprentice, the answer was little hut. So I was like, okay, I'll put in a little bit of hut. You know, certain things are off limits and I won't know why, you know, or I'll be told to change something and I don't know what is up. I remember originally the Leia's droid in Leia Princess of Alderaan that she's going around with, it was named K2. They're like, oh, you can't name this K2. And I was like, huh? Yeah. And that was right when Rogue One came out. And I was like, oh, okay.
That's K2. One of my favorite.
So I was like, well, I will fix this. And I named it L3. So no, that ran into Solo. So apparently we agree on how to name droids. But, you know, so the outline gets cleared to go. And then you work your way through. Sometimes things change between outline and writing the book because you don't know what's going to be in the next season of The Mandalorian. You don't know, you know, oh, look, this thing is going to be in The Acolyte or whatever it might be, but they do. Yeah. So you just kind of have to be prepared for that. So yeah, they keep an eye on everything and sometimes contradictions slip in because nobody's perfect. And, one thing is like the books very, very scrupulously adhere to what's on screen on TV and movies, and TV and movies do not have to pay one bit of attention to anything in the books if they don't want to.
So, I guess it's just too much for them to really pay attention to at some point, you know, because there's just so many books out there that probably have told so many stories. So you can't, I mean, if you had to do all that research, I mean, it'd be almost impossible probably.
I wish sometimes they just give us a little bit of leeway to be like, you know,
and even
knows.
some of the movies have contradictions, you know. So the movies even have contradictions in them. So
it's almost
impossible not to when you have that much time and things are just taking places in so many different times. So all of your books are canon. Do they still write books that are just legends? Is that even allowed?
I don't know.
A lot of books were turned into legend that were canon, and then they're not canon anymore. Now they're legend.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me if there aren't now, if eventually there won't be. I could definitely see that happening someday.
Yeah.
But I don't really know.
And we've seen books that were canon and then were legend, and then they do something on film that makes them canon again.
Yeah, and that is actually a thing. You know, I've pulled a few things from legends myself. I was, you know, somebody who had all the books, or up to a point. I fell out of it when I was in grad school and I just couldn't keep up anymore, but many, many, many years of many, many books. You know, I got all of those as well, but you know, I pulled out like the rules for Sabacc, which they, you know, they kept those. You know, there were a couple of other elements of things that I was able to pull upon. There are some references to some things in Master and Apprentice that harken back to the Jedi Apprentice books by Jude Watson, things like that. So, yeah, a whole lot of stuff. You know, it's like, you know, Thrawn is the standard bearer for this. But I think there will be more elements that creep in over time.
The Thrawn books are really, really well done. Mm-hmm.
Now Ed's got a question that I want to ask. Like I said, he wasn't here, but he gave us some questions. And he said, since you were, he said C-3PO had a line that begged to be explored about droid sentience. Is that on purpose or to foretell another story, or was it a write-off line?
It's in between. There's no definite follow-up story in mind, but I think most Star Wars fans agree the question of droid sentience is one of the big kind of messy, confusing things that we're not really sure how to feel about in the middle of Star Wars. You know, and I thought that it was worth bringing up a moment where Leia hits that contradiction herself, because for the most part, you know, sentient living things, they have no problems emoting and connecting incredibly to droids and then breaking them down for spare parts.
Yeah.
At the same time. So it's more me just sort of highlighting that contradiction, whether or not Star Wars generally or me particularly are going to go back to that. I don't know, but I think it's a very real conflict that's worth touching on from time to time.
And there's some weird things pointed out. I mean, in Clone Wars, Anakin definitely goes back to get to rescue R2, and he uses the excuse that he didn't delete, you know, something, but that really wasn't, he really felt a connection to R2. So him and Ahsoka go rescue it. Yeah. And then in Solo, you could definitely see that there was a connection between L3. And,
you know, so there was indeed many forms of connection between L3 and Lando.
Yeah, it was, it was even kind of odd almost. It was like, what are they, you know, but I mean,
it's a big, weird galaxy.
And that, yeah, sure. And then even in Rogue One, K2SO, and, you know, that relationship, like, there's all these different relationships. And
yeah, even though you one thing I thought was like super interesting about Andor, and I promise I will not now proceed to talk about Andor for the rest of the hour, which I could do. But
great.
For when they had a droid, you know, B2EMO, who is not as smart as droids like R2 and BB-8 and C-3PO. He's kind of like the dog, you know. Yeah. He has thoughts, he has jobs, he has feelings, but he can't comprehend things in quite the same way. And as soon as I saw him, I was like, of course there would be droids at every single level. Yeah. You know, things that are only slightly above your Roomba to, you know, incredibly evolved creatures like L3. I thought that was interesting. And then also you had Luthen Rail's ship, the Fondor, which is almost like a droid. He could speak with it. It can make evaluations. It can look at Cassian Andor's behavior. And I love that he calls it with a whistle, like it was a horse in a Western, yeah, which is amazing. But I thought that was another interesting way that they sort of explored, like, this is an odd, you know, this is an odd wrinkle in this universe that these people don't examine much. Maybe someday we will see them examine it.
Going back to Andor really quick. Rogue One is literally one of my favorite Star Wars movies, and Andor is right up there with the series. And I think one of the interesting things about, especially Andor, is that it doesn't even necessarily have to be a Star Wars series to be good. Like, it could almost take place in a vacuum. I mean, you know, like, there's no lightsabers. There's no lightsaber battles. There's no, you know what I mean? So it's like, it could just be a different story. And it's still just a great story on its own, yeah, not even being connected to the rest of Star Wars.
I agree with that. And yet at the same time, it does feel like Star Wars to me. Sure. Like, the core of Star Wars for me is that turn to the light. And that whole series is about Cassian's turn to the light.
Yeah.
We hit him at this point where he's been a very morally ambiguous kind of character. And this act happens that could be the thing that springboards him into a really dark place. And it doesn't quite work out that way. And you see him change through all of these experiences. And I also thought it was such a good job of showing the Empire's evil, you know,
yeah,
the way it crunches down on this planet, sure, minding its own business, you know, the fact that, I mean, we've seen a lot of really stupid Imperial officers. The fact that we saw the ISB being smart as hell and well run, you're like, oh, these are people who can get stuff done. Like,
yeah,
that's much scarier.
Oh, yeah, for sure. The ISB was a scary organization compared to compared to the military.
It looks like a good place to work. You know? Like he's always like, I have to keep you late, tell your families, etc.
It was definitely a clear distinction between, and you, I don't remember where else you see that, but you see that in a couple of places. Maybe it was the Thrawn books, but it was the, you definitely see a clear differentiation between the military branch and the ISB. It's like so worlds apart, because the military's, they're really like almost like idiots. Like you said, it's like, it's hard to believe they even could function, some of the people on the military side compared to the ISB, which seems to be like the very smart people and, you know, intelligence, I guess, is what they are. So it makes sense.
We're talking, you know, the Imperial and then the Empire and all that. Bloodline kind of, in a way, introduces us to the First Order, if you, you know, everything. How did that come about? Did Lucasfilm say, okay, this is what's going on with the First Order. We want you to kind of give us that intro, like how do they come into the Star Wars galaxy? Or did you say, listen, this is how I'm ending the book. What do you guys think?
Somewhere kind of in between. I mean, they wanted that suggestion. I think I maybe took it in a little bit more concrete a direction than they were expecting, but not so much that they were worried about it. But getting some of those younger people, like, you know, Curry Sindian, et cetera, and showing that, you know, these people are encouraged. These people know that something is building. And I was really happy to make it so that the thing that gets Leia isn't actually how any of the people totally against her behave. You know, the thing that gets her is when they turn on Castrofo.
Yeah.
And she knows that movement is eating its own. Like anybody who isn't absolutely hardline, they're going to destroy it. That's when she's like, this is going in a bad direction.
Yeah.
You know, it's his imprisonment that convinces her.
Yeah, for sure. All right, nine movies in the Star Wars universe. We're not going to count the spinoffs. Let me hear your rate them. What's your top? Give me your top three. The nine of the original of the three trilogies.
Well, I mean, Empire's at the top.
Okay.
You know, I don't think you can go much of anywhere without the original. And even though it's not a movie, I'm still gonna do this. Like, Andor hit harder for me than anything has hit since Empire.
Yeah.
You know, it is a huge part of my fandom. It will be a huge part of my fandom probably until death. Like, I love that show. I've watched every episode more than 20 times. Like, well, more at this point. I'm still finding stuff, and not like the fevered stuff your fan brain comes up with, like, oh, that could connect to this and that. Like, no, stuff that's in there.
Yeah.
It's definitely in there. So I know it's not a movie, but if you're making me pick like a top three,
you're good.
It doesn't make my top three. I think it's a really significant piece of storytelling. And I think, you know, it adds a lot of richness to that world. And ooh, did you hear the big movie news this week? Yes,
no. Did we hear? No.
No.
Well, we knew that there was going to be a, like, Birth of the Jedi movie.
Yeah.
And then we knew that that was going to be done by James Mangold, who did Logan. So already I'm like, well, that's very good.
This could be
awesome. And then they announced this week the writer is Bo Willimon, who wrote several episodes of Andor. So I was like,
so you're fangirling.
My interest in this movie just went much
very high.
Or it was like, and it was like, and now it's like,
I don't think they've done bad with any of the series. I think probably my least favorite. Boba Fett was probably my least favorite. I thought they did. And, you know, I don't think Obi-Wan did well with a lot of people. I thought it was really good. Obi-Wan's one of my favorite characters. And I thought it was well done. I think it's, probably top three lightsaber battles in all of Star Wars.
Oh yeah, there were some really good sequences in it, and ultimately I was happy with the character development. I do think there was some really clunky action stuff blocking out. I liked it more than not, and I thought that there was room to dig in. I think a lot of it was, I mean, it does have flaws, but I think a lot of the backlash is people's expectations were so much higher.
It's so ridiculous. You know? I mean, like, I think we
really, really, really wanted everything from that, you know.
It's almost impossible. And then people want different things too. So it's like, and let's be honest, Star Wars fans, there's a large majority of Star Wars fans that are the most toxic people, toxic fans in the world, because
well, I don't maybe, think it's the majority of Star Wars fans, but
well, maybe it's just the angry, loud ones. I don't know.
Yeah, there are people who are really loud, you know,
and it's like, not like nothing can please them. I think that group of people, like, it doesn't matter how good it comes out. Like, it'll never be good enough. So it's just like, what, you know,
You have to realize at this point, like, you have, you know, YouTube channels and the like, you know, there are people now who literally make their living or make large amounts of money not liking this. They're not going to change their opinion on the next thing.
By the way, 100%. I can tell you, as from running a Disney fan page and podcast for 10 years, we've seen many, many Disney pages that were once focused on specific things turn to basically a lot of just negative, clickbait-ish type stuff that they constantly spew on their pages, because it gets clicks and it gets likes and it, you know, it generates money for them. Thank God we have never done that. We don't like doing that. We're a fan page and we like to focus on the positive, but we've seen quite a few pages do that. That's all they do is post negative stuff all the time. And it's because
I'm the last person to be like, everything's been perfect, you know, correct, because it hasn't been. You do not want to get me started on Rise of Skywalker at any time. That's like the opposite way of not wanting to get me started on Andor. Like, the complete opposite is that, you know, Book of Boba Fett, literally about 20 minutes into it, like, my husband and I hadn't said a word, and I was like, is this really bad? And my husband was like, it's really bad. And
then it wasn't great.
It's all downhill from there.
It wasn't great.
Every once in a while they bring up something like, this could be interesting. Now it's gone and it will not return.
And one of the reasons I asked about your conversations with Lucas when you're doing stuff to check whether it's canon or not, because years ago, during the Epcot Festival of the Arts, me and one of our other co-hosts, Sam, was there, and we saw this picture that a Star Wars artist named Jeremy Saliba did, and it was a picture of Boba Fett with his blaster with pieces of the Sarlacc all over the place. So he's coming out of the Sarlacc pit alive, because everybody up until that point thought he was dead. And we asked him about that, and he goes, look, he said, I sent it to Lucas and they approved it. So, and this is 5 years ago. So this is before, you know, Boba Fett, we knew Boba Fett was alive. So it was interesting that's kind of how we knew that it was going to be okay for him to be alive, which is interesting.
Yeah. And also, it just stood to reason the character was too popular.
Oh,
yeah.
For really no reason at all, too.
Yeah, I was
never other than he looked cool.
Boba Fett person.
I agree. I mean, but like, there's like,
jetpacks are cool. I like jetpacks.
Maybe it's the Mandalorian armor that made him so cool. But I mean, you could have told stories about other Mandalorians and not,
as they did,
and they did, and not include Boba Fett.
Great.
And I think it's a good story, but I mean, really, but he was very, very popular just even after the original three movies, where how many lines did he have? Like three? Did he say like three words?
Not much. Yeah.
Yeah, not much. And definitely not enough to understand the character.
Mm-hmm.
Nicole wants to know if there's like a definitive timeline between Bloodline and Ben becoming Kylo Ren.
No, or at least not that I know of. If they've made that more definite, since it hasn't been communicated to me. Definitely in my mind, and I think, you know, I think that we are supposed to expect at least an element of this. You know, Ben finds out about Darth Vader being his grandfather in a really bad way.
Yeah.
And his mom is not on hand to explain that. His dad is not around. Luke is around, you know, and now Luke is having visions of Ben killing everybody. You know, so he did not find out in the ideal way. And even if it is not like the thing that pushes him to darkness, I do think we are supposed to understand that it is part of what went wrong.
And that was our follow-up question. And also, do we know if the reveal of Vader being the father of Luke and Leia and the way that it happened has anything to do with Ben becomes Kylo? And like you said,
we don't really know that, but I think the suggestion is that is at least a contributing factor.
Yep. Which makes total sense. All right, one last question. We've gone about an hour, which is about what we do. From Terry, how long does it typically take you to write a book like Bloodline? Or is there even like, is there an answer to that? Could one book take this long and one book take this long? And
books take different amounts of time. Bloodline was hilarious because you have to wait till you get an approved outline. And I did have the outline, you know, I had some of the ideas in my head. I did have all that, but I got the approved outline 40 days before it was due. And these were not 40 days where I could sit and go and do a thing. Like, I had to go to New York Comic Con. I had to go be a bridesmaid in Ireland, you know, like, literally, I'm flying across the Atlantic with a floor-length satin dress and my carry-on, typing like crazy on my laptop. That book got done fast. That said, it turned out reasonably well. You know, like when you're writing, sometimes you kind of get in the groove with it.
Yeah.
And I was like, I had no time to leave the groove. There was no chance to exit the groove. We had to stay there. So that
40 days.
But now I actually get it put in my contracts that a book is due on X date or a minimum of like 6 weeks to 2 months after outline approval.
God, it still seems really quick to me.
Quite that hard anymore.
That still seems really quick to me.
It is very quick, yes. But, you know, it can be done if it's got to be done. Generally speaking, like the High Republic, I've gotten to have much longer lead times in on that. I should have had tons of lead in time on Leia Princess of Alderaan, but I got really crazy sick while I was writing that. So I was running a lot of fevers. And now sometimes people are like, I like that scene where whatever. And I'm like, no memory of writing
I hallucinated that. Yeah,
I was not in a good place that day. You know, everything's fine now. I'm fine, but you know, especially right in the beginning, I think when they were figuring out what they wanted. But I had a good like 4 months, I think, on Lost Stars, and that was only after a very thorough outlining process that really had everything in order. But Bloodline happened in a hurry.
Wow.
Do you hit little spurts where you like the ideas just won't come? I mean, I guess it's writer's block or
honestly, I'm an outliner, which helps with that. I will give you my standard advice about writer's block. It is not the disease, it is the symptom.
Sure.
It's like saying somebody has a fever. Okay, how you're going to handle that depends on why they have a fever.
Sure.
You know, anybody can have just a bad day or two. That's just, you know, you can concentrate, whatever. Once it gets longer than that, like you owe it to yourself. If you just go, I have writer's block, then it turns into this mystical thing you can't get around. But like, are you stressed? Yeah. Are you burnt out? Is something not right in the story that you need to go back and deal with? Is there something emotional in the story that actually touches on something you didn't realize that's actually a little bit more sensitive for you? You know, there's a lot of reasons that that could be happening. So
that's really good information. And you've obviously been doing this a long time. Do you have someone close to you that you will throw idea, like bounce ideas off of, if something like when you're working out a story, like, hey,
this you know, always have editors. They're really great at Star Wars and at my mystery publisher. You know, if I just want to be like, hey, do you think that would work? You know, they're great for that. My husband is a great sounding board and, you know, is a great Star Wars fan, has a lot of thoughts about that. And I also just have some, you know, I mean, through the High Republic, I've gotten to know the other writers in that pretty well. And, you know, aside from High Republic stuff, we'll bounce ideas off each other for things that are, you know, not High Republic at all, or sometimes not even Star Wars at all. So, you know, and then I have like a couple of friends and beta readers that I talk things through with.
That's good. That's awesome. Yeah. That's, I mean, I assumed you would have some support group that you can just count on to say, hey, I'm trying to work this out. What are your thoughts? And even if you don't go with it, sometimes just talking it through just helps. Mm-hmm. Helps process.
Absolutely. And that is the main thing. Answering the question is usually critical.
Well Claudia. Speaking of your other books. This is an announcement that we're going to do. As we told you before we started the show, you are the first author for our book club, which, you know, being the one that picked it, I was very excited about it, to pick you.
She only picked it because she already read the book.
No.
And I was under pressure to get it done.
I honestly, like, and I said it on the show, you are my favorite Star Wars author. I mean, I read Leia, Princess of Alderaan first, and that's what hooked me to you as an author. So I was like, it's got to be a Claudia Gray book. Like, that's the first book I've got to do for the book club. But for our second book, we're going to go out of Star Wars, but we're still going to do one of your books, the one that came out last year, Haunted Mansion, Storm and Shade. So that is next month's book. And what would you like to tell our listeners, our people watching, about that book? What can they expect?
It's not like the summary or anything, but I think it's the thing that a group of like real Disney fans probably most want to know. I asked right at the beginning of it, I was like, okay, do I need to take into account these movies or this or that? And Disney was like, no, there will never be one totally verified truth of the Haunted Mansion. There are legends.
I love that.
There are legends. They never want anybody to have the whole truth. You hear different ways it can go, but you're never going to know for sure. The Haunted Mansion has to retain that element of mystery.
I like that.
Yeah. So that was great. That gave me a lot of leeway. And also was excited because, as you guys will know, the Haunted Mansion in Disneyland is canonically in New Orleans, where I currently live. So, and I'd read other Haunted Mansion stuff set in New Orleans that was clearly written by people who had never been to New Orleans. Like, one of them had it being in a hilly part of town. It was like, guys, this is a soup bowl. It's
very, by the way, soup bowl. My main complaint, my main argument with them retheming Splash Mountain to Tiana's Ride, which I'm very excited to see, but I'm like, I don't understand. There's no mountains here. There's no hills.
There's no splash.
Monkey Hill and at the zoo. I mean, that's probably the highest point.
I guess that's it. Yeah. but it's been fun. Like, it was fun getting to have some local color. And the best thing has been, like, New Orleans readers have come up to me and be like, I think I know the neighborhood where it might be. And I'm like, you probably do. But they can't pin it down exactly, just somewhere around there.
Yeah. I love it. What area do you reside?
I'm in the Riverbend area.
Okay.
Over by like Cafe Lebanon.
Okay.
I find in New Orleans, the best way is to tell people what restaurant.
So, so right around Canal and River Road. Yeah.
Not Canal, but near River Road.
Near River Road, gotcha. I've eaten there. I work for a local bank, and we have a. I love Uptown. I love that whole. I love that whole area. I'm not a big. I mean, obviously, I live here, so anybody that lives here really doesn't like the French Quarter. Maybe during the day to explore, but like not for the party. Not if I'm going to go out, I'm not going to go to the French Quarter. I may go uptown. I may go to the Bulldog on Magazine.
Well, like there's good places in the quarter, but you have to work around. Like none of them are on Bourbon Street.
Correct. Correct.
At all. You know, like I was trying to explain to people from out of town. I was like, no, go to Croissant d'Or out on Ursulines.
Yeah.
Walk away. That is where the good French pastry is. You know, another five blocks. There you go.
For sure.
You know, there are things like that, but yeah, I find, we enjoy it the most. Like if we go like to dinner on a random Tuesday and it's chilled out. And
one of our friends in the comments, Melissa Ladd, will be here during for a conference next week. And I'm going to take her over to Giana.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if you've been there, but it's,
I've heard
it's part of the Link Restaurant Group, which is the same people that own, Pesh and and a few others, Boucheret and Couchon.
Really
good. So we're taking her. She doesn't need fish. So I would have done Pesh, but she doesn't need fish. She's coming in from Michigan. That's one of my favorite things to do is show people around the city and show them the really cool areas that you're not going to find on a tourist map.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I look forward to the Haunted Mansion Storm and Shade.
I hope you guys will enjoy it. I had a lot of fun doing it.
Now, where can everybody find updates on what you've got coming down the pipeline? Where do they need to go to find out what's going on?
Okay. I am almost inactive on social media now, which I have to say is the greatest thing.
release.
Like I'm still on Instagram, but that's mostly, I would say 90% of what I'm doing on Instagram is about either interior design or dogs. But if you go to my website, claudiagray.com, gray with an A, it needs updating badly, but at the same time, it will connect you to different accounts. You know, my assistant posts, you know, upcoming releases and things like that, on those. I also have a newsletter that I am seriously overdue to write some copy for. Next up, I will be at Cleveland Fan Expo this weekend. And then I believe I will be going to, Motor City Comic Con in Detroit in later in May.
Very well,
that's awesome.
And I did see your next book coming out is X-Files.
No, my next book coming out is the third book in my mystery series, the Jane Austen Agatha Christie mashup series, The Perils of Lady Catherine de Bourgh.
Oh, okay.
That will be coming out in June, and then the X-Files is in July.
Okay. That's so awesome. Everybody go to the website. I'm showing the website now. You can see all the books, and you can also get a signed personalized copy, which I know I'm gonna
go ahead and order those right now. Actually, it's from Octavia Books in New Orleans, Louisiana. If you want one, go ahead and order those. We are moving away from New Orleans later this year. And I don't know when or how I will get that next signing thing set up. So if you're in the mood for such a thing, go grab that from Octavia.
Nice. Awesome.
Well, that's good information, because I know I'm definitely going to be getting a signed book. Thank you so much for coming on. We truly appreciate it.
Oh, thank you guys. I'm glad you guys enjoyed it.
We'll reach out maybe after Haunted Mansion and have you back. And you don't have to commit, but
Let me know as the move gets closer. I am going to chaotic. Lose it. But if I am functional at that time, hopefully we can make that work.
And if not, I completely understand. I don't ever want to move. I swear to God, I don't ever want to move again.
Yeah.
Or who knows? Maybe we'll do a later. We'll do a later episode on Andor, and you can just come on and talk.
Oh, we do a whole show.
I will come on and talk and not shut up.
That'll work.
Claudia, thank you so much. Thank you guys all in the comment section for the great questions. We truly appreciate it. Go out and pick up the Haunted Mansion book by Claudia Gray, and so we can get started on that. Morgan, you got a deadline on that yet?
I do not. I will look at the calendar tomorrow and post, as well as a link. And I'm actually going to go ahead and tomorrow post the link to Octavia Books so we can support a local New Orleans bookstore and people get a chance to get a signed copy.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you. We really appreciate it. Everybody, have a great night. Bonne nuit, les gens. Good night, people.
Have a magical night. Hakuna Matata.
There's a simple rule that's compulsory. Mortals pay.